have mutual influence. Still, many Iranian cooking terms are Mongolian, like plate, pilaf, and spoon, among many other names. These are the names that have remained in Iranian culinary culture since the time of the Mongols. And for this reason, I think this temple is a symbol of mutual cultural influence between Iranians and Mongols. Mr. Salimi, with his children, who are great in martial arts, make different and wonderful types of noodles based on the ancient traditions of their ancestors. They work in this workshop in Gozaldare, Sofla. They make a smooth dough from a good quality of flour. Sometimes they add turmeric or saffron according to different types of noodles. Sometimes they make smooth dough without using any spice and roast them in the oven. Noodles aren't used only in ash, and sometimes they use it like pilaf and eat it with khoresh. They sometimes mix roasted noodles with pilaf and make reshte polo. Different kinds of delicious noodles are cooked in different ways according to the tastes of the artist chef. The whole process of producing noodles is done in perfect cleanliness. Heyran in the Talysh language means the place of cloud and fog. Gardan-e-Heyran is located in the west of Gilan province and near the Talysh village of the same name on the road to Astara. The humidity that rises from the Caspian Sea reaches this 1,500-meter altitude. For this reason, Gardan-e-Heyran and the adjacent valley are always foggy. Gardan-e-Heyran, you can eat one of the most famous kinds of ash in the northwest of the country, ash-e-dugh. You can also see the beauty of nature here.
طبخ آش‌های لبنی در سراسر ایران رایجه. یعنی آش دوغ، آش ماست، آش قره قروت، آش کش.
Cooking this kind of ash is common in Iran. آش دوغ، آش ماست، آش قره قروت and آش کش are very common in different regions among different ethnic groups and you can find its varieties all over Iran. This kind of ash is popular after آش رشته, that is one of the most common ash and it is cooked differently in various parts of the country. The difference is that some of these types of ash dugh are flavored with different ingredients. For instance, in Ardabil, they add garlic. In other places, they add mint and fried onions and etc. It has become commonplace that people go to nature and they cook ash there. They would also add mountain plants to flavor the ash. I think it is a great idea to eat ash in Iran's natural sites. Of course, eating ash standing up is not interesting at all. I did this on the instructions of my respected director. We must eat ash together with our friends and relatives and talk about interesting topics. Whenever you eat ash like this, please be kind enough to remember us as well.
یکی از انواع
آش شله یزدی is another type of ash that is cooked in our country. Ash sholi is very important in the life of people in Yazd. It is not the main dish, but it is very common, especially when people gather together. It is made of a wonderful combination of vegetables and beetroots. I think it is super delicious and healthy.
فوق العاده خوشمزه و به نظرم خیلی سالم هستش.
They eat ash sholi with sugar or vinegar and they like it sweet. Tehran is a city that has been in a struggle between modernity and traditionalism for about two centuries. Like any other modern metropolitan, beauty and ugliness can be seen in this city. Following the procedure of accelerated and alien development, the beauty of the city has been replaced by ugliness. Toubkhane Square's original appearance was changed in a bad way and couldn't be recovered until this day. Tehran became the center of attention since the time of Shah Tahmaseb I. He ordered the construction of fences and buildings in Tehran. Since then, Tehran has gradually attracted the attention of the people of other regions of Iran because it was famous for its wonderful climate and great fruits. Agha Mohammad Khan, head of the Qajar dynasty, chose Tehran as the capital, and after that, the development and expansion of the city was accelerated. The establishment of the royal court and military centers and the development of the Tehran Bazaar as a commercial center of the country in the later periods, especially during the period of Nasir al-Din Shah, elevated the importance of Tehran. And since then, the population of Tehran has been composed of all the people of Iran. Many gates were installed in different parts of the city, of which almost no trace remains today. In the onslaught of modernization of Iran, it was believed that the old buildings and monuments should have been destroyed. Here is the old Toubkhane Square and today's Imam Khomeini Square. They demolished the Baladiya, the City Council of Tehran, Telegraph Office Building, and the Post Office, and built a big and ugly building in their place. The place of the Baladiya remained empty until today, and the alley behind it is a disproportionate relic of its old vision. The Tehran Ray Railway and Telegraph were among the first manifestations of technology in the city. They used Mashin Dudi to go to Ray and pay tribute to Shah Abdul Azim and visit Hazrati Bazar. People liked these moments very much in the old Tehran. Older adults have many memories of this exciting trip. Tehran began to expand irregularly at the end of the Qajar period. In addition, urban management organizations and new facilities were launched in Tehran, but the old way of city administration was still common. In the course of this irregular expansion, cultural and educational facilities, the new commercial and political centers were established in Tehran. Tehran became the center of attention, and this change came with crowdedness and chaos. Traffic and pollution in Tehran became unstoppable phenomena. These problems gradually became a part of the city's identity. More people were able to buy a private car with the increase in oil revenues. Congestion, crowdedness, and density of cars became immeasurable. There are few buildings left from the first period of modern construction. One of these monuments is the Parade Square in Imam Khomeini Street, and the other, Kahe Sharbani, which is currently owned by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. A special architecture is used in such buildings to create a modern space for new offices. A mix of Islamic and ancient Iranian architecture is manifested in this work. The prominent designer of this building is Gabriel Gouvrekian. He is the founder of a new style in modern Iranian architecture. Other buildings of this period, such as the buildings of the Milli Bank, the Civil Registry, and Alborz High School, which were all newly established institutions in that period, followed almost the same architectural style. Today, Tehran suffers from traffic and air pollution. Nowadays, there are more impressive sites to visit in Tehran. Tehran is among the big cities of the world with all of the weaknesses, strengths, the ugliness and beauty of such cities.
A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Senior doctors in England began voting on strike action over pay, piling pressure on Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to resolve a series of long-running pay disputes. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. Ministers are facing the possibility of fresh industrial unrest as teachers and senior doctors prepare to ballot for strike action and hundreds of nurses gather for the Royal College of Nursing annual congress. It comes as the Royal College of Nursing General Secretary Pat Cullen called on Health Secretary Steve Barclay to restart pay negotiations, with a proposed rise in double digits. Members of the Royal College of Nursing, one of the two unions to turn down the recent government pay offer to NHS staff, will gather in Brighton, East Sussex, as the long-running dispute continues. Union members will begin a new ballot for strike action on 23rd of May, after the existing six-month mandate runs out at the start of the month. But a Department of Health spokesperson said the government's pay offer was fair and said that there were no plans to reopen negotiations on this deal. Senior doctors and teachers' unions were also being urged to think carefully before taking strike action as they prepare to ballot their members. Members of the National Association of Head Teachers and National Education Union, NEU, rejected the government's recent pay offer, with ballots for members to vote on industrial action opening on Monday, 15th of May. The NEU, the National Education Union, said it will be re-balloting teacher members working in England's state-funded schools with a current mandate for industrial action ending on 13th of July. The National Association of Head Teachers ballot will close on 31st of July, with education unions agreeing to coordinate strike action in the autumn term. The National Education Union Joint Secretaries Mary Busted and Kevin Courtney blamed a lack of engagement from the government for the decision, but said it was never too late for the Education Secretary to come to the negotiating table and make an improved offer. The General Secretary of the National Association of Head Teachers, Paul Whiteman, said that the union had been left with no other choice but to seek this mandate for industrial action. A Department of Education spokesperson said the move was bitterly disappointing. Senior doctors in England also start voting on Monday, 15th of May, on whether to strike in the continuing dispute over pay. Dr. Vishal Sharma, who chairs the British Medical Association Consultants Committee, said talks had been held with the government to try to resolve the long-running row, but it remains deadlocked. He said the union simply could not accept a deal that continued this downward trend and has been left with no option but to proceed today with a ballot for industrial action. A Department of Health spokesperson said, "We hugely value the work of NHS consultants and they receive a 4.5% pay uplift last financial year, increasing average earnings to around £128,000. They will also benefit from generous changes to pension taxation announced at budget and are eligible to apply for additional financial awards worth up to £40,000 a year as part of the NHS consultant contract. We urge the British Medical Association to carefully consider the likely impact of any action on patients." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Senior doctors in England are to vote on whether to strike amid continued row over pay in healthcare, as teachers' union also plan to hold a ballot for industrial action. The ballot will open on Monday, 15th of May, until 27th of June, as the British Medical Association urges members to approve. Dr. Vishal Sharma, who chairs the British Medical Association Consultants Committee, said talks were held with the government in an attempt to resolve the dispute, but the deadlock persisted. "We have seen our take-home pay decline by 35% since 2008-2009, and this is even before the impact of this year's soaring inflation has been considered," Dr. Vishal Sharma said, speaking on behalf of consultants. "As a result of this, consultants are now effectively working 4 months of the year for free. Even as late as this weekend, we remained hopeful that we would secure a pay offer that went some way towards marking up for the decline we have seen. Unfortunately, however, given that inflation remains in double digits, the final offer from the government represented yet another real terms pay cut. On the back of 15 years of our pay declining, we simply could not accept a deal that continued this downward trend and have been left with no other option but to proceed today with the ballot for further industrial action." Dr. Vishal Sharma said consultants did not want to take industrial action, adding, "Ultimately, the government made a political choice to cut our pay again this year, and unless we can secure a commitment that the government will take the necessary steps to restore our pay over the long term, we simply cannot accept an offer that sees our pay fall even further." Meanwhile, a nurses' union is preparing to ballot on whether to strike again after its leader requested a double-figure pay rise for nurses. Pat Cullen, General Secretary of the Royal College of Nursing, initially encouraged Royal College of Nursing members to accept the government's offer of a 5% rise for 2023-2024 and a one-off payment worth between £1,655 and £3,789. However, this was rejected in a vote by 54% against and 46% in favour. Speaking to the Sunday Times, the General Secretary of the Royal College of Nursing, Pat Cullen, called on the Health Secretary, Steve Barclay, to restart negotiations and said the numbers need to start off in double figures. Grant Shapps, the Energy Secretary, told Sky News he found Pat Cullen's change of position to be confusing. Two teachers' unions will also open new strike ballots on Monday, raising the prospect of coordinated industrial action in the autumn term that would cause widespread disruption to schools in England. The National Education Union, the NEU, which has already staged strikes this year in pursuit of its claim for a fully funded above-inflation pay rise, is reballoting its members as its current mandate for industrial action ends on 13th of July. Members of the National Association of Head Teachers will also be asked to vote on whether they are in favour of taking strike action after failing to reach the legal threshold for turnout in an earlier ballot. Other unions are also expected to ballot their members after all four education unions rejected the government's final pay offer of a £1,000 bonus and a 4.5% average pay increase next year. Dr. Mary Boosted and Kevin Courtney, the National Education Union Joint General Secretary, said the pay and funding offer made by the Education Secretary, Gillian Keegan, following 6 days of talks in March, was simply not good enough, and teachers branded it an insult. Our reballot would allow the National Education Union to coordinate action with other teacher unions in the autumn term if government does not provide a settlement to the dispute. The Department for Education said it is bitterly disappointing that unions continue to pursue strike action, despite having already cost children almost a week in school. The Department of Health and Social Care spokesperson said, "We hugely value the work of NHS consultants and they receive a 4.5% pay uplift last financial year, increasing average earnings to around £128,000. The Department of Health and Social Care spokesperson added, "We urge the British Medical Association to carefully consider the likely impact of any industrial action on patients."
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear ladies, welcome to a new episode of Muslim Lady. Well, this is IRB English Radio. I am Asma, playing your host for today, and Sister Zainab is here with me. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Wa alaikum assalam, and assalamu alaikum to you and your listeners.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Well, previously on Muslim Lady, we talked about jobs and how nature of a woman should be considered with the job she is going to take as her career for future. So right for today, you know, as this topic is such a vast topic and the more you dig into it, the more of things would come out. Then let's talk about these features more and more.
We have been talking about the physical capabilities of a woman. There are some exceptions, but in general, the physical anatomy of a woman or her capabilities do not allow her to go for all kinds of jobs that the world offers to her. And there are some countries, alhamdulillah, that have realized. I have not touched much of the Islamic countries. I have just given examples from even non-Islamic countries. Just realizing the human nature and the physical anatomy of a woman, they have realized that women should not go for certain kinds of jobs. And this is not much highlighted, why I am coming up with the examples of these countries, because when Islamic countries restrict a woman from doing a particular kind of job, that is so much highlighted in today's media world. And it's said that it's a ban on her freedom. It's a ban on her, being outspoken, outstanding,
independent
kind of person. But there are some countries who have this realization that it is not in the honor of a woman to do particular kind of jobs. Like in China, they say she can't be a miner here. In Argentina, they say she can't be a glass cleaner here. In Belarusian, they say like she can drive a bus carrying more than 14 passengers.
Yeah.
We said in Guinea, they don't allow her to work with all kinds of tools, like certain types of hammers are legally prohibited for women to be working with. And we said Russia prevents women from being truck drivers.
Yeah.
Can be truckers in Russia, and more than 400 plus jobs we said that they don't allow women to be doing, realizing their physical anatomy and the capability. In the similar way, we said France bars women from doing labor activities that involve carrying loads heavier than 55 pounds. And that's really in the honor of a woman. And now, similarly, we have some of the more countries, like in Madagascar. It's not now, this one is not on the physical I will say
aspects,
or like I can say yeah, and I can say it's not something related to loads, because for now it was related to something that will harm her physical body. But now in Madagascar, they are not allowing women to distribute literature, the posters or the books or the published material.
Why?
Due to the moral code, they consider it to be something against morality. See, when a woman is kind of advertising something, I may not 100% agree with it. You may also not 100% agree with it.
Of course, I do not agree with it.
Maybe there are many women out there who do not agree with this or who do agree with this. But Madagascar considers it to be something against morality, that women come out to the streets and distribute, you know, posters, the newspapers, the published material, the books. They consider it, it's not in the honor of a woman. It's not in the dignity of a woman. A woman should not be
strange. It is a strange, very.
Well, there are some countries who agree with it, and there are some countries who disagree with it. Well, coming back to Islamic countries now, like it's Pakistan. Pakistan does not consider it suitable for a woman to fix machinery. And like, again, another Islamic country like UAE, the United Arab Emirates, it does not find it suitable for a woman to be in the jobs where she has to handle most sticky, smelly, and toxic things.
Now, this one is beautiful.
While as in many of the countries in the rural areas, you will see women, they will be milking cows or, you know, goats or
the animals,
Doing sticky kind of jobs or handling toxic materials. But in United Arab Emirates, a Muslim country, does not allow women to be doing this, and this won't be highlighted in the so-called, I will say, the mainstream media, because this is something good.
Yeah, because it's very nice, just as my reaction told you.
Yeah. So these are some of the countries that have really realized either the honor of the woman or her dignity, that she should not be doing some particular kinds of jobs, either on the streets or in the workplace or in any labor force. That kind of does not actually, go in line with her dignity.
Yeah, that's very true. So right now, I guess it's the best time for us to go for a short break. You can take a sip of water just for the break, and then we'll be back. Yeah, we said that different countries have enacted different laws in order to protect women, and it is whether considering their nature or their dignity or anything that is going to be related to the status of a woman in society. So they enacted laws in order to protect her, and different countries have got different attitudes. Maybe there are some laws that are really not good sort of restrictions, but the rest of them, I guess, mostly are for the benefit of women, because they come in the slogan that, okay, this is going to be a healthier job, this is going to be an easier job for a woman to do if she wishes to get outside of home instead of being a mother, working and being independent on her own self. So this is one side of the story. Now, all we talked about was about society and the law and the nations, what they decide for women to do. Let's go for the woman herself. There are many things that naturally a woman, considering her nature, would never like to do.
Exactly. There are so many jobs that a woman does not like to do by her nature, or there have been so many heartbreaking stories from women, like wherein they were forced into some kind of labor and then they were not actually willing to go into it. Women generally, talking, women naturally hate doing jobs which require overtime. Because overtime jobs, now there are many reasons why overtime. First of all, she can't balance things between family and work, so they hate overtime jobs.
She would be an automaton, of course.
Yeah. And there are other reasons as well. For example, now you come from an elite class family and you're doing a job because of some, you know, kind of being to be independent. And also you don't have that family pressure, and maybe you're unmarried and you don't have those kind of responsibilities that that a woman has in general. But again, overtime work is disliked by these women as well, because they feel like, you know, I was just studying. There are so many research why women hate overtime jobs is because overtime jobs make them bald easily. You start losing your hair at an early age. Your hair starts getting grayer at an early age, and they definitely don't want
you to. You would get bald.
Yeah. And all other kinds of jobs that provide a negative body image for women, they hate
it. Yes, of course. Staying awake at nights for women who work in the airports.
Exactly.
For women who work in the hospitals and in the places that you have to stay awake all the night.
Exactly.
So these things are going to cause you different sad consequences, like the dark circles under your eyes, and then, like, just as you said, the hair loss, and then maybe even the weight, their weight is going to be unbalanced. And many things that all the women would hate.
Just imagine you're working as a programmer behind the system, and obviously programming needs a lot of intellect. It needs a lot of overthinking, overtime. And when you're sitting all the time just behind the systems, it's affecting your eyes. It's affecting your body. You're just sitting at a particular place for hours, and it definitely does affect your body. So women really do not themselves like many kind of jobs, but they yet go for certain jobs because of some of the reasons. And one of the very interesting things I was going through just a couple of days ago was, I'm sorry to say, it was a story of a porn actress, and she had ended up into this industry just because of the financial crunch she had at the home. She first starts working for the magazines, you know, wearing less clothes, going for modeling, and then she starts talking to her manager that do not publish it in the particular place or in the area that those magazines get published. She buys all the magazines herself around her area but she just constantly starts helping her family. But you know, opposite to the very fact we have in Surinur, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, do address to this issue of poverty in your societies. Do not let your women, you know, they should not get into some kind of, you know, trap. So you as a Muslims have responsibility to look into address poverty in your societies. So if you're a Muslim leader, it is your duty. And if even if you're not a leader, it is again your duty.
Every single person in society has got this responsibility toward their fellows. So right now, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Yes, you're listening to IRB English Radio. Muslim ladies, we're talking about you, and we said that considering the nature of a woman, it is not actually easy for a woman to go for all sorts of jobs. Now, we do not talk about she being forced into getting special jobs because we know how life works out, but we're talking about the normal situation. In a normal situation, a woman, considering her nature, is not going to, even herself, she's not going to be interested in going for many jobs that are going to lead into different health issues.
Exactly. So there were the health issues we talked about. There was a body image we talked about. There was a negative body image, like women hate getting as a consequence of many jobs. Like we said, like she hates to be into the jobs that take overtime from her, that, you know, she has digital strain, sting on the systems for like more time that is required. And then again, many other reasons, many other jobs are there. Like now we have this positive body image. Sometimes what is considered to be a positive body image in this society today, in this media world today, even in that world, we said that even the porn actresses were not ready to get into that kind of industry until they had that matter of poverty or to help their families financially to live in particular kind of countries.
Or they just get attracted to something that is more of a trap than of a reality. Because when she gets into that industry, then she understands that she's not going to gain anything.
Exactly. Because, you know, she is made into a sculpture and then the eyes on her are not like that of human being. Everyone looks at her kind of beyond modesty.
And she has a time in those sorts of jobs.
So there are many kind of jobs like where women get emotionally drained, but they still go for it, maybe for the financial reasons or for some other reasons. And especially they go for the jobs which are not of their consent. Basically because of the poverty reasons, because of the financial reasons, and it's the duty of a Muslim society to address poverty in the society. Why we have so many verses about charity, why we have so many narrations about charity, why do we have so much about taking care of other human being. Like other human being is considered to be a part of your body.
Exactly.
If one is in pain, your entire body should be in pain. So that's like we have to, as Muslims, address ourselves so that a woman has that place, what Imam Ali Islam said, she's a flower, not a servant.
We're talking about the normal situation. Now, we know that life has got too much of ups and downs and many things might happen in the way of a woman's life that might force her into getting to do things that she does not like to do. But in a normal situation, it's always wiser to go for whatever that your nature asks you to go for. And nothing beyond your, you know, capacity or beyond your abilities. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Mm-hmm. Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the Limelight.
After coming to office despite making false promises regarding immigrants, U.S. President Joe Biden has adopted the same extremist policies as his predecessor Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Amnesty International has said the United States has once again taken the wrong approach to responding to the global refugee crisis. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has covered this story and tells us more. The Biden administration began implementing a sweeping policy shift at the U.S.-Mexico border on Friday, 12th of May, as a COVID-era order that had allowed the swift expulsion of many migrants expired and new asylum restrictions took effect amid confusion and uncertainty. Several last-minute court actions added to questions about how President Biden's reworked border strategy will play out, with advocates filing a legal challenge to the new asylum regulation as it was enacted. Facing concerns that the end of a three-year-old order, known as Title 42, could further strain U.S. border facilities, cities and towns, U.S. officials were keeping a close eye on the movement of migrants that had already reached record numbers in recent days. U.S. Department of Homeland Security official Blas Nunes Neto told reporters on Friday, 12th of May, "We continue to encounter high levels of non-citizens at the border, but we did not see a substantial increase overnight or an influx at midnight when Title 42 expired. Seeking to discourage migrants from traveling to the U.S.-Mexico border, the Mexican government said its National Migration Institute has ordered its officers not to issue immigration documents or other permits enabling travel within the country, creating another obstacle for migrants. Though a chaotic race to U.S. border ports of entry on Thursday, 11th of May, appeared to have given way to relative calm on Friday, 12th of May, there was a sense of confusion among some migrants. As the U.S. border fence dividing El Paso, Texas from Mexico's Ciudad Juarez, hundreds of migrants who had slept there overnight formed a single file line to be brought into the U.S. by authorities and put on buses. Texas National Guard, state troopers and border agents patrolled the area. Immigration advocates represented by the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, filed a legal challenge against the new asylum bars, claiming they violated U.S. and international laws. Advocates argue that the new regulation put in place by Biden's Democratic administration to curb illegal crossings resembles restrictions imposed by his Republican predecessor Donald Trump that they had successfully blocked in courts of law. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas defended the Biden regulation, claiming it aims to encourage migrants to enter using legal pathways. Alejandro Mayorkas told MSNBC, "It's going to be a tough transition." U.S. asylum officers hurried to figure out the logistics of applying the new asylum regulation. Further complicating the new U.S. policy, a federal judge in Florida ordered the U.S. Border Patrol not to release any migrants without first issuing them formal notices to appear in immigration court. The Texas Attorney General later asked the federal judge to do the same. The website of Globe and Mail has also covered the same story. In chaotic scenes on Thursday, 11th of May, migrants scrambled to enter the US before the new rule went into effect. The regulation presumes most migrants are ineligible for asylum if they pass through other countries without first seeking protection elsewhere, or if they fail to use legal pathways for U.S. entry, which President Biden has expanded. Tens of thousands of migrants in recent days waded through rivers, climbed walls and embankments into U.S. territory. Lindsay Taxilowski, director of Immigrant Defenders Law Center, one of the groups suing the Biden administration, said the new asylum policy was extremely disappointing when people's lives are in the balance. According to the National Border Patrol Council, a union for agents, around 25,000 migrants were being held in U.S. Customs and Border Protection, CBP, facilities near the U.S.-Mexico border on Friday, 12th of May. About 10,000 migrants per day were reported crossing illegally over the past few days. Unaccompanied children are exempt from the new regulation, and advocates have warned that parents might send children across the border alone. Former U.S. President Donald Trump first implemented Title 42 in March of 2020 as COVID swept the globe. The order allowed American authorities to quickly expel migrants to Mexico or other countries without a chance to request asylum. Some Democrats and immigration advocates say Joe Biden's new regulation is too harsh. The measure also counters previous statements Biden made in 2020 on the campaign trail when he said it was wrong for people not to be able to seek asylum on U.S. soil. Joe Biden, who campaigned on reversing Donald Trump's policies and is now running for re-election in 2024, kept the order in place. Migrants have been expelled more than 2.7 million times under Title 42, although the total includes repeat crossers. Mexico has generally only accepted certain nationalities, its own citizens, migrants from northern Central America, and more recently migrants from Venezuela, Cuba, Haiti, and Nicaragua. So during the same period, around 2.8 million migrants ineligible for expulsion were allowed into the U.S. under a process known as Title 8 to pursue immigration claims. Republicans fault the Biden administration for easing Donald Trump's more restrictive policies, while the Biden administration has blamed Republicans for blocking legislation to reform the U.S. immigration system. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. As Title 42 pandemic-era rule ended at midnight on Thursday, 11th of May, Alejandro Mayorkas, the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security and a former Cuban refugee, issued a stern warning to would-be migrants, saying, "People who arrive at the U.S.-Mexico border without using a lawful pathway will be presumed ineligible for asylum." In many ways, Alejandro Mayorkas' statement directly contradicted some of the promises U.S. President Joe Biden made as a candidate during the 2020 presidential election. Then Biden had pledged to dismantle Donald Trump's hardline immigration agenda, calling the numerous restrictions his rival enacted to shut off access to the U.S. asylum system as cruel. After taking office, Joe Biden reversed some of Donald Trump's border policies, including a program that required asylum seekers to wait in dangerous Mexican border cities while their cases were being reviewed by U.S. courts of law. But for more than a year, President Biden kept and defended in court Donald Trump's most sweeping border restriction, the Title 42 emergency order that allowed agents to cite the COVID-19 pandemic to quickly expel migrants without hearing asylum claims. The Biden administration on Friday, 12th of May, started implementing a rule barring migrants from asylum if they don't request refugee status in another country before entering the United States. Advocates suggested that such a restriction mimics two Trump-era policies known as the entry and transit asylum bans, which were consequently blocked by courts of law. As a result, the new restrictive border control has already been challenged by the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, and other immigrant rights groups in federal courts of law. In its effort to dissuade migrants from traveling north, the Biden administration has also partnered with the Colombian and Panamanian governments to create regional processing centers to screen migrants who could be eligible to enter the U.S. legally.
Yani?
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time, it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show. This time, our journey took us to the city of Abhor in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaron Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects in the field of oil refinery liquid waste. Another project was research on the treatment of synthetic resin sewage discharge using synthesized photocatalytic nanocomposites. These are used to gauge and remove pollutants in liquids for purification purposes.
This company actively exchanges scientific information both nationally and internationally and regularly publishes its findings in academic journals at home and abroad. It collaborates with academic institutions and other research-based firms, providing them with test results. The government has been shifting more and more towards a knowledge-based economy that thrives on research. So knowledge spillover plays a big role in entrepreneurship, especially in cross-discipline research. Having labs in the country dedicated to advancing specialized research is very important. These types of knowledge-based companies help expand products in the market that may have been previously imported. It was the first company in the country to apply science for manufacturing wastewater treatment and purification. Its manufacturing workshops are massive, with a cumulative area of over a hectare to produce the giant water treatment systems. Its machinery is used in industrial settings where water is refined and returned to the system for reuse. Furthermore, its machinery has helped preserve valuable water resources nationwide. Some sectors that apply this technology are the food industry. In general, all industries that use water to produce their products are the end user of this company's water purification machinery. All of the technology produced here is manufactured along the lines of European standards. Its capabilities and products have been exported to regional areas, including Europe. As part of its future goals, this company wants to expand its product list and increase its exports. It's noteworthy that this company has created numerous job opportunities directly and indirectly. Among its staff, this company employs the capabilities of environmental engineers, among other experts, on its roster. Among its many competitive advantages, one can name the high-quality material that is used for productions of its water purification systems. But that's not all. This company has played a big role in creating technology that preserves all the fine qualities of water using advanced machines for purifications. Iran has been supporting the shift to a knowledge-based society by implementing plans that empower companies in their efforts to develop advanced technology. In fact, in 2010, the government passed laws promoting and supporting knowledge-based companies as part of a legal framework. This has paved the way for boosting innovation and scientific progress, leading to many social and economic advantages. In 2013, there were only 50 knowledge-based firms and startups. That figure has grown over the years to well over 6,000 companies, according to the Vice Presidency Office for Science and Technology. A diverse range of products is manufactured by these firms to meet the country's rising domestic demands. This has saved the country millions of dollars by reducing expensive imports. Iran makes thousands of different types of specialized technologies. The amount of progress of knowledge-based firms in the fields of medical devices, energy, and information communication technology is the most noticeable. Aircraft maintenance, mining, petrochemicals, and pharmaceuticals are among other disciplines researchers are focusing on. And exports of knowledge-based products are estimated to reach over $1 billion by the end of this year. That's based on figures from the Science and Technology Office. The National Innovation Fund says tech firms and knowledge-based companies raked in over $5 billion in revenues last year. Some 40 knowledge-based companies are listed in the stock market as well. So far, the government has implemented numerous policies and plans to help support knowledge-based companies over the years. Some of these schemes include loans.